Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Alpha.
And I'm Armando.
And in this fourth and final special episode of the New Statesman podcast, we'll be joined by the former Conservative MP turned Change UK founding member, Anna Soubry, and journalist and broadcaster Paul Mason to discuss consensus in British politics. Now, Armando, why do you think it's important to talk about this right now?
Well, I think this is the summation of all the special podcasts we've been doing, because the thing that has worried me really over the last 5 or 6 years is, yes, more and more people have become, I think, vocal about their political beliefs and opinions. A lot of people have become committed, but it's very much more to single campaign issues. Mm-hmm. Within parties, things have got more fragmented. I think not just the power of the Prime Minister, but the power of any party leader has become so dominant that it becomes a case of you're either with me or you're against me. There's nothing in between. And in all these pockets of opinions, so on, I just worry that we're losing that habit of being able to debate, of being able to connect with people who do have opinions different from us, and trying to establish whether there is anything that we have in common.
Are you worried about free speech as an issue in particular?
Well, that's behind it. You know, I think it's right that people are passionate about their beliefs, that want to defend them. What worries me is that we've lost that sense of being able to tolerate hearing something that we disagree with and coming up with an argument that we can engage with that person about it. And it does worry me that we lose that art of the art of debate, really, if all we can do is just stand by our beliefs and not want to listen to anyone who has even a partial disagreement with us.
And it seems like Brexit and the past few years have massively exacerbated
And that's, you know, not just a tectonic change in politics, but it's added to that whole debate about identity. You know, whether you're a Remainer or a Brexiteer has become one of these dominant categories now that seem to turn us into these tribal groups. I think has added fuel to, you know, has given lots of politicians extra weapons to play with in terms of culture wars and being able to dog whistle attitudes, or just being able to use key phrases and words like get Brexit done, or for the many, not the few, things like that, rather than feel pressure to actually outline what they do believe in and what their principles are and where they're open to compromise.
And I think we're really lucky. We've assembled a great panel to discuss this today. Two people who really lived through the heart of those divisions. We'll introduce you both formally. So Anna Soubry, we're really delighted to have you with us. Anna was the MP for Broxtowe until 2019. She was elected a Conservative, but left the party to help found and eventually lead the breakaway party Change UK. She has become an outspoken critic of the government's Brexit policy.
And also joining us is Paul Mason, who's a journalist and broadcaster. He was Newsnight's economics editor before taking on the same role at Channel 4 News, and then left Channel 4 in 2016 to spend more time campaigning on the left in British politics. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, it's great to have you both with us. Can I start with you, Anna, having been in Parliament at the heart of these divisions? I'm wondering if we could just start by asking you, if you agree with Armando that things have become particularly toxic and find it very difficult to agree, and also why you think that our political climate has become quite so difficult and it's so hard to reach polite consensus.
And you are allowed to disagree.
Yeah.
According to my own rules, you are allowed to disagree with me.
I feel quite, in a way, sad that I am now going to be defined by Brexit. That really hacks me off. It hacks me off that I'm seen on the extreme of the Brexit debate. And I'll just tell you one quick anecdote. I was asked to do a pilot for a program, TV program, on the basis that, you know, people either really liked me or absolutely loathed me. And it really made me sort of sit up and think about who and what I am. It says a lot about what's happened in politics, because someone like me, I am the epitome of that one nation, middle of the road, Ken Clark, get on with anybody, Tory. You know, I am never, have never been on the extremes of politics. But because of Brexit, and that's where you're right, that it has, for some people, put you into one of two camps, but not everybody. It's really important to understand that, you know, I think for the majority of people, certainly outside of London, they kind of just get on with the rest of their lives and they are not defined by Brexit. But Brexit, you know, was this sort of huge thing that happened, and unexpectedly, of course. And in the drive to somehow deliver this undeliverable thing, it meant that these powers of, I think, of really nastiness that had driven the whole of that Leave campaign. It's like now they were from under the stone, they were out, it was their day, and they were going to make damn sure that they got what they wanted. And in doing that, they adopted that Trumpian playbook. They saw the rise of Trump as being the way forward, and that's how you win elections. And if you were able to delve down and look at how the Conservatives won in the May elections in Nottinghamshire, they did it using a style of language and issues that, frankly, I would have expected from the old BNP. It was that bad, and it was that bad. And what really upsets me as somebody who lived in Nottinghamshire for the vast majority of my life is they won. Until the forces of sanity and reasonableness and more moderation and all the rest of it get their act together, we are lumbered with this nastiness.
Well, I mean, getting act together is the question, really, Paul. I mean, you've been on a little bit of a journey as well in terms of your expressions of devotion to the party leadership within the Labour, and then kind of, you know, adjusting to the reality of the fact that, you know, there has to be more than just a big heave to get Labour into power.
Yeah, I mean, look, what I think we're talking about is not just something that's the product of Brexit. I think we're talking about the emergence of a faction within political elites all over the world that's rejected globalization. It quite likes the free market, but it just wants to do it on a national basis, making whether it's Hungary or Britain or the United States great again. And they're prepared to create a new social coalition. That's what Anna's describing there in Nottinghamshire. I know it from my own hometown in Lee, which went Tory. It was liberal in the 19th century. It was never conservative. What that new social coalition wants is xenophobic, it's nationalist. And what is the most interesting thing is, I mean, I am a Marxist. I'm not a cultural Marxist. I'm an actual Marxist. I'm used to being otherized. But what is amazing now is to see liberalism otherized in the same way. That's what Trumpism, that's what vote Leaveism, that's what Viktor Orban is doing in Hungary. You know, I occasionally write for The Spectator. I get pilloried for doing it just because I want to maintain wherever I can that old infrastructure that we are all part of a democracy. We're part of a nation. We want its national security to be maintained. But there are no limits. Where I think they are being driven from, yeah, Anna refers to the Conservative campaign in Nottinghamshire. I've been very engaged in the debate over the England Euro 2020 football campaign, where you've seen Conservative politicians, again, effectively adopt the tropes and the language of the far right over the team taking the knee. And I think what we're just going to have is a robust argument, but not an argument ad hominem. A large parts of the left, you know, where I come from, are literally sort of hiding in a cave. They don't want to engage with the unfortunate sort of mixture of conservatism and sort of far-right ideology that is propagated in civil society.
Do you think there's, and this is a question for both of you really, are the main parties now at the stage where they've gone beyond a tipping point of really relying on their core base and have abandoned that idea of trying to reach out to those who wouldn't normally vote for them?
No, not at all. Not the Tory party. Labour, look, there's two really distinct things here, and we've got to be, in my opinion, really clear. So there's what's happening in the Tory party, and then there's what's happened in the Labour party. And I think that's where Paul and I might start to really heavily fall out, because the Labour party went off to the left with the election of Corbyn and became absolutely unelectable, as it was in 17, and then most importantly in 2019, handing this huge majority to Boris Johnson. So there are two distinct things here that have been going on in both parties. But what's been, where I think I might agree with Paul is the, I get really frustrated and angry about people who will not stand up. Lots of decent people hide away now. They should be making an argument. And one of the reasons we're in the mess that we're in is because small L liberals, and if it's, you know, if that includes me, I'll put my hands up to it. But they assumed that they were taking people with them. Immigration is a really good example of it. And now, instead of engaging with people and making the case and having a rigorous argument, my experience, certainly the Labour Party, is they go, oh, yes, I understand, I feel your pain. And instead of saying, I'm sorry, what are you talking about? Let's have a proper conversation about this.
It sounds as though you both are in agreement that, to a large extent, it's the current Conservative strategy that is stoking very intense, bitter divisions. What do you each think needs to happen in order to counter that quite divisive electoral strategy? I think you were touching on it, Paul, about not hiding away.
Well, I think the Conservative Party, it absorbed a large part of the UKIP and Brexit Party base. It certainly absorbed a large part of its vote. It is using the language of right-wing populism. So it needs to be defeated. I mean, I've got friends who, Anna is an acquaintance, but I have actual friends who are Tories, you know, saying to them, look, we need to engineer a position whereby you can spend a generation out of power. Otherwise, you're going to end up like the American Republicans, with a willing host of fascism. How do we defeat them? I think, you know, it's pretty obvious. Hannah Arendt said, you know, described what we're up against. She said, you know, it's an alliance of the elite and the mob. The only time we ever defeat alliance of the elite and the mob is an alliance of the centre and the left. And I'm on the left, and I know that means sacrifices, political sacrifices, going to have to be made to form that alliance. But switching the focus to Labour, the problem is we are now facing in the Labour movement the rapid fragmentation of the social coalition that came to form Labour. They lost bits of Sheffield, bits of Bristol to the Green Party. Look at what happened in Batley in the by-election there. 8,000 votes for what I regard as a right-wing populist, George Galloway. Almost all from Labour, I'm told by the activists there. It's a very fragile social coalition. And we need a leadership and a politics that can put just that back together.
And it's not an easy coalition, isn't it? Because that does imply, you know, the likes of Labour joining forces with you, Anna, and the Lib Dems, as well as the Greens, and possibly some kind of arrangement with the Scottish Nationalists.
I'm in favour of all of that. Not when I say joining, I mean making tactical agreements.
I can see Anna's objecting.
Our two main parties have always been, this is what was the argument in favour of the first past the post, was that you got coalitions because both parties were coalitions. And the old Tory party that I was a member of when it's a student, and then when I came back in the 2000s, it was a coalition. It is no longer a coalition. It is dominated in the way that we have described and led by Boris Johnson and all the nastiness that we can all agree on. And what you haven't got is any form of coalition for which includes moderate one nation type Tories like me. And great respect to Paul, and he'll correct me, and if I'm wrong, I apologise. But the trouble is that you have to understand there is a profound difference between the membership of the Labour Party and people who vote Labour. And the idea that you are going to form some coalition, you see how this coalition is being described? It's being described as political parties. It's the leadership of those political parties, or even the membership of those political parties. But that is not how we are going to defeat these dreadful forces. And that includes the forces of extremism in the left. It only will occur when people come to behind something, the moderate, sensible, centrist voice of the majority, I still believe, that is out there in the real world, when they have something that they can believe in and they can support. And I think there's a good argument, actually, that Labour is now absolutely defunct, because it's going to take Starmer years, just look like it took Kinnock, and then it took John Smith, and finally Tony Blair, to root out the left, the hard left. And that's why I still believe, I don't know what it will be, but we can't go on like this. There's a vacuum in politics. There are millions of people who feel totally homeless.
My take on things at the moment is that while there is, I think I agree with both of you in that there is this yearning within the parties and outside the parties for some kind of consensus, but consensus doesn't necessarily mean neutral in the middle on everything. You know, it's actually, I think people are in favour of some radical consensus. But the problem is the party system and the electoral system. I mean, how is something like that going to be achieved under the present system? You can go out in the streets and persuade people.
I agree with you about the electoral system.
Yeah.
I'm shaking my head because the biggest problem is tribalism. And if there's a couple of things that I learned during my time in Parliament, and then as I got to know the Labour Party, because I worked with so many people before I left the Tory Party, but then subsequently, is that the Labour Party is so tribal. That even the Liberals at a local level are so tribal. And we can sit and Paul, for all his brilliance, can try, and it will take him years to get these people to agree to this, and it's too damn late. It's all broken, and it needs something new.
So my model for this, for trying to address this problem, it is what happened in France in 1936, the so-called Popular Front. I mean, everybody's heard of the Popular Front because of Freedom for Tooting, but the original Popular Front, not your generation, obviously, because it was a sitcom in the 70s, but the Popular Front was literally an alliance between the French Radical Party, which were liberals, and the French Socialist Party, which were quite moderate, and the French Communists, who would probably fit into Anna's definition of extreme, to defeat fascism. Now, what's interesting, I've been studying it for the book I've written, is that it did indeed take control away from the party leaderships. It was local committees, or often led by teachers who were seen at that time as intellectuals, you know, civil servants, low-level civil servants, not, in other words, trade unionists or left activists. And they formed, you know, cultural groups, local groups, and made all it did is it delivered a government. It delivered a government that immediately delivered social reform and indeed stopped fascism for 4 years until the Vichy regime came along. Now, why bring that historical parallel? Because I think it, especially for my part of the political spectrum, the left, that one of the first things you learn is that that was a disaster. That it was a disaster that in any way the left formed a kind of big tactical alliance with liberalism and social democracy. We are going to have to do it.
But does that mean forming an alliance with, you know, Anna's not just centrist, but one nation conservative voter?
Well, if necessary, absolutely. You know, in the Spanish Civil War, Churchill's nephew fought and spoke on the same platform as communists. I've got no problem with that. But let's be clear. There are two political strategies here between me and Anna. They're different. Because that group of people that were forming, you know, the independent group and Change UK, and there was a much bigger group of Labour MPs who would have gone with it, I believe, under other circumstances. I was looking at 50 or 60. They want a democratic party, i.e. the US Democrats. As you can hear from Anna, what they don't want really in that is any trace of the left, of the far left. Unfortunate fact is, you can defeat the miners, you can defeat an entire generation like my dad's generation of left-wing socialist workers, but they don't die. And they've got votes. And there are hundreds of thousands of them involved in politics, age 70. And you can't form something that's anti-Tory without them having a stake in it. We need a progressive alliance. Its promise needs to be constitutional reform. That's the next stage in British politics. If we don't get it, like Anna, I agree, we're stumped.
Okay, Anna.
You see the language, an anti-Tory. Right, so I am somebody who's done something which I don't think anybody else has done that's involved in this conversation. I have stood in a general election in a seat that is marginal. So I had to win that seat from Labour. And if Labour is going to win the next election, it has to win back seats like that. You don't win by insulting the very people who you are saying, I know how you voted last time, but this time I want you to vote for the other lot. And I think it's symbolic of the complete failure of the left to understand that you don't insult, as I say, those very people that you want to win over. It's a real mistake we make that we think that people are obsessed with politics and that they identify themselves in some way politically. Most people watch politics out of the corner of their eye, and they only address it when an election of some description comes up and people are out wanting their vote. And broadly, they vote for people who will, one, be competent, and secondly, broadly share their values. That's how it happens.
You're listening to a special bonus episode of the New Statesman podcast with Armando Iannucci. When we come back, we'll talk about what a political alliance of the centre and left might look like, and what can Paul and Anna agree about.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Anna, you were saying that you would like to see something new. What would that look like? We've kind of heard from Paul what that could plausibly be, and you're not on the same page with him. You still describe yourself as a One Nation Tory. Would you ultimately like to see a bigger tent of conservatism?
The Tory party is not going to change, right? It's in the grip of, Paul's absolutely right. It's turned into the Brexit Leave party and God knows what else. It'll basically sell its own soul, or its own granny, for a vote. Deeply unpleasant, absolutely populist. All the sensible people have either left or have effectively been muted. And so that is not the vehicle, if you like. That's not the way forward. The Lib Dems, God, if I thought the Lib Dems were the answer, I would have left the Conservative Party and joined the Lib Dems. They are not the answer. I always thought the tragedy when I was in Parliament was that I'd often find myself in the Labour lobby, not just on Brexit, but other things. And I'd talk to certain people and say, this is ridiculous. Why aren't we in the same party?
Do either of you think there might be a need for some Faustian pact between both sides to at least agree to disagree for 2 or 3 years, if only to get electoral reform and proportional representation?
No, they won't do it.
Well, I'm. It's not a Faustian pact. I think, let's talk about, we haven't mentioned Scotland. You know, Labour, as Anna says, is intrinsically tribal on Scotland. It's going to have to overcome that. Scotland's gone, you know, I think I think it's leaving the UK within a decade. The terms on which it leaves matter to Scottish people because they will leave with the Bank of England in control of their economy. Who controls the Westminster government is an important question, even if you are a very ardent Scottish nationalist. I think that's the basis of a conversation we need to be having with them. The point is, like what happened in, there was various local county council elections in May, you know, secret spreadsheets were created between the Lib Dem, Green and Labour activists, unbeknown to Labour HQ, and resources were diverted to certain wards, etc. I mean, that's a start. All we can do is lay out what the goal is, which would be, I think, a progressive coalition government that delivered PR and that delivered, not just that, defence of the rule of law. The rule of law is crumbling in this country. You know, the whole Dominic Cummings revelations, his testimony. You know, Dominic Cummings says, I want a dictatorship that pushes the legality to the limit. That's not, he's not a fool. He's just saying what the American far right think. So we need to defend democracy against that. I will do it alongside Anna Soubry, or indeed any liberal Tory or however they self-described. That's then got to deliver something, because otherwise you're in the position Macron's in. Macron, the kind of blood is draining from Macron's cheeks right now, because there's no content apart from Islamophobia and attacks on working class people. So this is the problem. When you create something brand new with no roots, then you've got to deliver something.
Or circumstances are so huge that people are almost by necessity forced together. I'm thinking of the example in Israel where you've got, you know, yeah, Arabist and very ultra-Orthodox Jewish parties together because they just wanted rid of Netanyahu. And I do wonder whether we've had not just Brexit, which was already the biggest shake-up of the UK since the Second World War, followed by the pandemic, and then something as major as climate change. You know, if we were to argue under those circumstances, you two have to form a national government, you know, what would you agree on?
Look, I'm sure there are things we would agree on. Look, I'm somebody who, when I was a student, was a member of the Anti-Nazi League as a Tory and went on demonstrations against the old National Front in Birmingham. I was a huge activist in defence of the 1967 Abortion Act. So you can always find issues upon which there's cross-party support, and that's obviously to the credit. I mean, I have to say, ironically, I actually could work better with the old trots in those days than nowadays, because they became so unpleasant and so tribal. You'll always find the single issue. The thing that then marks you out and will divide you, and that will then lead to the fall of the government, is when you determine what your budget's going to be, what your economic position, because you can't do anything unless you've got the money there and you've agreed what your economic strategy is going to be. And at that point, Paul's thing completely falls apart.
I think there are very propitious circumstances right now where that might be solvable. First of all, the fact is, you know, Labour promised to borrow 250 billion at the last election over 5 years. The Tories have just borrowed 330 in a year and printed most of it via the Bank of England. We've got a big problem, climate change. I think the challenge for those of us who want to find common ground, and I do, is to root the answers in the economics of combating climate change. And if we use climate change, as it were, as the substitute for Keynesianism, mm-hmm, around which the left and liberalism came in the 30s, then a Green New Deal, or whatever you want to call it, could be combined with a new fiscally expansionary orthodoxy, that is, you borrow money, print it and spend it to save the world. I know I could, more than with you, Anna, I think there are other conservatives who you could now have that discussion with.
Anna, would that appeal to you?
Paul is absolutely right in his analysis about government spending, and then rightly going and making the comparison with what Labour had promised under Jeremy Corbyn. However, what's happening in the Conservative Party now is that you see the likes of Ken Clark and you'll see Philip Hammond, in other words, the more sensible, the old One Nation, obviously Ken being the prime example of that, who are going, oh, hang on a moment, how are you going to pay for this, Boris Johnson? And there is a division, because Johnson, he doesn't give a monkey's, you know, it's not his own personal life where he's useless with finances. And I know where I sit in it, as you might imagine. I'm with Ken Clark, who says, we can't just borrow all this money without sensibly paying it back. I think the next thing is going to be inflation, which is going to rock it.
I'm not getting a whole amount of consensus on this one, but I'm wondering whether...
We've been going for 20 minutes. I mean, you know, the Good Friday Agreement took, what, 3-4 years?
Do you think that this is likely to get better, or is it going to get worse? Do both of you think that this is the permanent situation or the semi-permanent situation of British politics, a time of deep divisions?
Certainly, it's a time of deep division. One thing I am worried about is what happens if my side win? I mean, people were scared enough of Corbyn. I saw it on the doorstep, you know, in 2019, not so much 2017. They had bought the idea that he was an anti-Semite and a threat to national security and a lot of this. People in Longbridge, you know, the old Labour stronghold. Now, what I worry about is suppose it all happens. Suppose you end up with, you know, 2019-style Keir Starmer as Prime Minister, Nicola Sturgeon in the government, the Greens in the government, and etc. There's a section of British population that would see that as a revolutionary provisional government. You know, that they believe that it's the Antichrist. Politics is cryogenically frozen by COVID-19. And as it thaws, and we saw it with the end of the England campaign in 2020, you know, there's mini riots everywhere. There's hatred and division. Yeah, I'm worried about it. And all you can do is build resilient institutions and organisations at societal level that can counteract it and that can sort of spread a kind of more general sort of anti-toxicity.
Anna, what about you?
I simply don't know what the answer is. I think we all agree that we are in unprecedented times for a variety of reasons. I agree with Paul about this nasty division that exists in the way that I honestly don't think I've seen this before in my life. And I don't know what the answer is. I thought it might be Keir Starmer, but I don't know whether he's going to do what he needs to do, which is to take, as I've described, to take the Labour Party back into regaining that centrist landscape. But something has to come out of it, because there is, as I said before, millions of people who feel politically homeless and in despair at what is happening. And there's a vacuum there. And something good, I'm going to be positive, something good has to fill that vacuum. In all that we've discussed and in all that is happening, the one thing that's not happening is that nobody is actually looking at the causes of Brexit and addressing those causes. It's completely lost on everybody. That's a real mistake.
What I think we need to do, though, is to focus on what works in politics. What worked for Labour in Batley was, I was there, you know, saw it firsthand, was a kind of radically prosaic politics. Kim will get your potholes fixed. That's what you're talking about there, Anna. And you know, this was a place where there was real attempts to stir division, and Labour overcame it, and they did, by all accounts, according to those I've spoken to who've seen the results, i.e. ward by ward, they did create a new coalition of voters because they lost a big chunk of voters. The specifics of that case are the specifics, but the generalities are, actually, I thought when I saw Kim Leadbeater in action, this is kind of what a Labour MP is meant to be. And when you saw people on the left saying, yeah, but she doesn't understand policy, well, you know, Harold Boardman, who represented Lee, where I come from, for something like sort of 45 years in Parliament, reputedly never made a speech. He never made it. But, you know, I mean, I'm not against people who don't understand policy becoming, because they're decent, ordinary, honest, trustworthy people, becoming MPs. And I think we might have to go down that route a little bit more across the whole of politics.
Yeah, agree. Hey, that's quite a good ending.
There we go.
Yeah. Peace in our time. Anna Soubry and Paul Mason, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Armando, what was your takeaway from all that?
Several things. One is, I think where there was agreement is that the trouble with politics is that it's too full of politicians, in that we need a different type of person to engage in politics, which takes us to that, you know, the street level, the ground level thing that both of them were talking about. And, you know, I came into this with some optimism, thinking, are people desperate to establish contact and communication? Slightly not depressing, but I can see it's not going to be something that happens over the next 2 or 3 years. There's at least a decade in this in trying to. It's not about realignment. I think it's about making people see politics differently. That it's not to do with parties. It's not to do with ideology, although all those things are important. That the party structure is somehow an old-fashioned structure that is slightly hampering what it is that people really want to do.
Interestingly, I think I almost took the opposite from it in terms of the traditional party structures, because I suppose just because of the day job, I'm really comfortable with Paul, a Marxist, and Anna, a One Nation Tory, not really getting along on in terms of the fundamentals.
Yes.
What I feel like I was hearing from them was actually that Anna's politically homeless, and if there was space for her in the Conservative Party again, a lot of the current tensions in our politics would be fixed. And that's where the two of those very different political animals clearly really do agree, that they're both quite sad looking at the current political landscape and sort of despairing at the divisions. I think, you know, both of them speaking in quite tough terms about, you know, Anna comparing certain Conservative campaigns to the BNP, and Paul talking, you know, about the Conservative Party becoming the willing host of fascism. In a really profound sense, I think they're both a little bit disillusioned.
Scared.
But very much in agreement about the way politics should be and what they want from a democratic system.
Yes. I mean, given this is the end of this short season, it'd be nice to end on an upbeat sing a song or something. I mean, I feel over the last 4 weeks, we've kind of scratched the surface, really. There's a lot more there. We need to do at least 1,000 of these to get to the heart of where politics is now. I mean, I think I do get this sense that over the last 5, maybe 10 years, there's been a fundamental shake-up within people's belief system, and it's not quite matching the official structure of politics in Westminster. That feels to us now a little bit old-fashioned, a little bit alien. Unfortunately, it is where more and more power is residing on a daily basis. And that's the fundamental problem, I think. I suppose, you know, the conclusion is to those listening to this, over to you.
So that's it for our series. Armando, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you felt welcome.
Oh, very welcome. Yes, nobody's punched me. So that's a plus. I've found it both enlightening and entertaining at the same time.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you, and I hope we'll have you back very soon.
Oh, who knows?
So goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to a bonus episode of the New Statesman podcast with me, Alva Ray, and our special guest host, Armando Iannucci. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and don't forget to subscribe. You can watch video from this podcast on the New Statesman's YouTube channel and on the New Statesman website. This episode was produced by Adrian Bradley, and our executive producer is Chris Stone. The music is Devil with the Devil, licensed under Creative Commons. Thanks for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.